Oh, yeah?
Oh, is that the joke you're talking about?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, hopefully we'll find out in the episode.
I guess so.
9/11! Is that the joke?
No.
Howdy, roundabout, all you shaggy goose egg boys, and welcome to another episode of But you know what? Soon enough. Well, we'll save that for later. Go ahead.
What Jake just said is that this is the final episode of the graduation series. We're going to have a little graduation special. But as far as reviewing movies, this is the last of the semester. And, you know, what better movie to end it on as our final destination of this season to be Final Destination? Yeah. That was not good. Hi, not... Kyle. How are you?
I used to make all the little bitches come running around.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If you know, you know.
Hey. Yeah, he pointed at something that you can't read. We'll cut that out.
What's in the box?
Will we?
Yeah, I don't know. Who's about this editing this? Okay.
Check out our other channel, School Night Studios.
Yeah. We're going to be making movies there soon, guys, so I don't know. We got
to
talk about
that. And check out my Nighthawk channel, which might be renamed to something else before you watch this.
Thing.
Yeah, for the other thing. Mm-hmm. I got a cartoon coming out. It's probably going to be out by the time you watch this, called Postman.
And, it's like Post Malone, but
okay,
he's a man.
Kind of. Fair enough, hey. Anyway, movie.
Final Destination.
All right.
Why did we choose this? This was your. This you wanted to do this, right?
Yeah. I wanted to do this too.
Okay.
And I got a lot to say about this movie, but let's.
Okay. Let's just you know.
All right. Let's go.
Let's just hop into the pre-cap.
Yeah.
All. Final Destination starts off with our homeboy main antagonist. His name is Alex, and he is a high school senior who is getting ready for his senior trip to Paris, France. And he's packing his bags, and like most rational people, you know, he's kind of scared about flying. And also, like most rational people, he tends to lean on, you know, small superstitions just to keep him comfortable. And one of those superstitions is keeping the tag from the last flight that he carried his luggage onto his luggage, because he's like, oh, well, that gives me a sense of security because that, you know, made it through one flight. And so, you know, if I take it to this flight, then that just means I'm going to be safe. And his mom's like, nope! And she rips it off. And so that kind of creates a domino effect of bad omens that he sees leading up to actually getting on the flight. And, as soon as he gets to the airport, we see all these bad omens. For one, John Denver plays on the overhead radio.
Not the song you want.
Not the song you want, because
Don Denver.
John Denver apparently died on a plane crash.
And, is that real?
Yes.
Dang.
It's said. And also, we meet all of the other characters. We have his best friend, Todd. And we have his rival, kind of bully. His name is Carter, and then he has his girlfriend, forget her name, Terry. And then we have this other guy named Billy, and then we have his teacher, and we have Clear Rivers, which is kind of his, will turn out to be his romantic interest. She is reading a book called, Touring Paris, and in it is a picture of the car that Princess Diana died in, because she died in a car wreck. And there's a lot of other things going on, and everyone is kind of nervous about flying, but Alex is the one who is the most animated about it. He's kind of shaking the whole time, and I think it's Carter, or it might have been Todd, who, while they're boarding the plane, they see a baby crying, and then he says, you gotta be a fucked up god to strike down this plane, and then they see a man who is mentally disabled, And he's like, yeah, a really fucked up god. And, which we'll get into that later. And what's really making him nervous is that they're about to board this flight in the middle of a thunderstorm. So obviously, you know, you're going to be nervous as shit.
Huh?
I think I figured it out.
What do you mean?
The joke.
What's the joke?
Keep going.
I don't think he did.
Well, maybe not.
We're not there yet. So anyway, they board the flight.
Are we there yet?
And they take off. And then already, you know, things start to happen. They hit some heavy turbulence. The lights go out. You know, like there's a door in front of them that like, the dining table door in front of him like breaks off, and he's like, "Oh no, you know, I'm nervous." And then they get fucking struck by lightning, and fucking everybody is panicking. And then you know the left side of the plane rips off, and then starts sucking people out, and then the plane explodes. And then Alex wakes up.
It's a very brutal, like, scene.
It is. It is. But in comparison to all of the other movies that came after this, they don't showcase everyone's individual death. They all just kind of die. And I kind of like that better.
In this one or the others?
In this one.
Okay.
In this one.
So the others, they, like, show everything? Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Alex wakes up. And he's like, whoa, what the fuck happened? Did I just envision this plane dying, this plane crashing? And immediately, he goes over to his seat, and he tries to open, like, the dining table thing, and he sees that the latch breaks, like it did in his vision. He's like, oh shit, I just prophesized everyone dying. And so, very calmly, he guides everybody, all of his classmates off the plane. He doesn't look like a terrorist at all. It's fine. And,
Oh.
What?
Is that the joke?
No, shut the fuck up!
I just...
For those of you who don't know, earlier I told Jake that I know that at some point you're going to make a particular joke and you're going to say it multiple times, and I'm going to give him a little signal when he does it. I'm going to do this. So, when you see it and you see me do this...
That's the joke.
That's the joke, yeah. All right. So
I think
anyway,
the joke is the fact that Jake will never figure out the joke.
No, I'm actually kind of scared that you won't now. but anyway, so anyway, they get off the plane, and you know, airplane security is kind of like, you know, bothered that this kid is like saying that the plane is going to explode, but the plane takes off anyway, and French teacher stays on the plane, and the plane fucking explodes, and they're like, oh, this kid isn't crazy, he fucking planned that. And so that kind of falls into the rest of the movie, where he's trying to figure out why he could see everyone die before they die. And the FBI, who, by the way, does anybody remember what the FBI's agents' names are?
Death.
What are you doing in my swamp?
Shrek.
Is that the joke?
Yes.
Hey! We figured it out.
Yeah, so,
Is that, like, the word you thought
Agent,
I was
Yes, Agent Ween and Agent Shrek. Ocean
what
Man
are
and
you
Swamp Man. So, anyway.
I did it, guys.
So, anyway, FBI agents are quietly investigating behind the scenes. You know, they go to the memorial. Everybody's kind of in shock, PTSD. And Alex is just, you know, trying to get back to normal life by, you know, reading some porno. But he can't do that because, you know, he's still too bothered by the plane crash. His friend Todd freakishly dies by a freak accident. Essentially, you know, a bunch of domino effect things happen while he's brushing his teeth, which lead him to strangling to death on a shower curtain. And it looks like a suicide, but it's not. It was a complete freak accident. And Alex shows up at the scene because he had a feeling that he was going to die. Claire shows up, too, because she feels some kind of, you know, weird connection with Alex, and the FBI show up because, you know, of course, someone who was involved in an investigation died, and the person that they were suspecting the most was there as well. So, you know, they're really hard on Alex now, and so was Clear, because she likes him. And so, from this point forward, Alex starts to feel like there is a pattern going on. And so he and Clear go over to the morgue, and they talk to the mortician as he is preparing Todd's body. And the mortician very blatantly threatens Alex that he cheated death, and that this is a game that, you know, you kind of don't want to play if you're trying to cheat him again, because, you know, you were supposed to die on that plane crash. Essentially, the mortician is death. He, in the cast, he is credited as death. He's a personification.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
And he shows up in all the movies. He's in every movie.
Well, he only shows up as a voice in the fourth one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
Well, long story short, the mortician is death, but he does kind of challenge Alex to play this game. He does give him a clue. He tells him that this is all death's design, which gives Alex a clue that there is a design between this, and if he can figure out the design, if he can figure out the pattern, then he can get around it the same way he did in the plane crash. So he pulls up the map of where everybody was sitting in the plane, and he notices that there is a pattern. That Todd died first, and in his vision, he was seated closest to the explosion. So it's kind of going in a diagonal pattern. What?
And he discovers this. You might want to... Do you care about the Batman spoilers?
I don't.
Yeah. Okay. You do care?
No, I don't
care. Okay. So minor spoilers for the Batman. He figures out the pattern in a very URL Rata Alana style, yeah. Where it's just like... He's just like there, and he goes, "That's it."
Yeah.
So it's very,
it just kind of clicks.
This is the Batman solving mysteries.
This is it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. He's like,
it was a very quick jump to that conclusion, because literally, like, the mortician says the word design, and then Alex is like, "Design? That means if I figure it out, that I could beat it." And I'm like, "Whoa, hold the fuck up."
It's not even the way the pattern isn't even like
it's,
a real pattern.
No, it's just who was seated closest to the cockpit, which exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. But anyway, going from that order, he has a map that tells him who is going to be next. And if he is correct, then that means that his teacher is going to die next. And his teacher is very drowned in grief, because she has lived in this town her whole life, and she feels particularly guilty because she was supposed to go back on the plane. She wasn't supposed to stay with the students. The French teacher was. She was just an assistant. And she instead put him back on the plane, and he died, and she can't stand living in the same neighborhood where his family lives. And... So, yeah, she's just wallowed with grief and paranoia. So is Alex, but he's kind of going about it in a different way. So she pours herself some vodka, and which, you know, eventually leads to her to it dripping on her computer that is turned off. And it, you know, shorts out and explodes, and the glass, you know, get into her neck, and then she fucking dies, and her house burns down, and Alex tries to help her, and it ends up making it worse, and it very much sets himself up to look like the murderer, when it was really just a freak accident. And so he runs out the house... So now he's, you know, really being questioned by the FBI.
He picks up the knife. So there's like a knife in her chest, and he picks it up, and he goes like,
"Yeah."
He looks like he killed them. He killed her.
Yeah, and he looks at the knife, and he notices that, and he drops it down. And he's like, "Ah, shit! Did I cause this somehow?" Is kind of what he's thinking. But anyway, so, you know, that happens, and the kids get more, you know, spooked, and then he tries to warn the rest of the students, and Terry, Carter's girlfriend, is like, I don't want to deal with this, and then she gets fucking hit by a bus and dies.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody's real panicking, and they're kind of thinking that Alex is onto something, because Billy actually saw him at the house. And so, you know, Clear and Alex have a moment where he convinces her about the design and that he's going to see if he can intervene and, you know, try and make death go around them if he can. And so... Clear meets with Billy and Carter, and, you know, they all get together in a car, and they're, you know, they're talking about this shit, and Carter gets real spooked by it, and so he's like, all right, well, you know, if I'm next, then I'm going to take my own life, as well as all yours, and so he, parks his car on a fucking railroad as a train is coming to, you know, hit the car, and the rest of the gang gets out of the car. And at the very last minute, Carter is kind of fueled by this power of, you know, kind of taking control of his own life, and he's like, it's not my time, but you know what, very supernaturally, the car doors lock and he is trapped, and Alex tries to pull him out of the car, and the train, the way it is shot, the train crashes into them. It does not show them, like, jumping out of the way. They should have died. Yes, they absolutely should have died. Yeah. But the train crashes into the car, and the train We see that they're on the other side with the rest of their friends, and they're kind of, you know, frazzled and talking about this, and Billy is very scared, and he's like, no, I'm going home. And then, you know, a bit of shrapnel from the car flies and decapitates Billy.
It's like...
And everyone is fucking horrified by this, except for Alex, who is going batshit crazy, and he's like, wait a minute... It should have been Billy, but I saved Billy. And so if I intervene, then it went to the next person. So that means that this design works. And so he starts to have a god complex.
But the way he dies, again,
it's very Jeepers Creepers.
It like, so there's a piece of, like...
I think it's three.
Looks like...
Might have been two.
The one part of, like, the bus. One of the metal panels that had, like, ripped off. And it was, like, under the railroad as the train was going. Mm. And, like, I guess it was wind or something?
Yeah.
That was, like, picking it up, and then it got caught on a chain or something, and flew out from under the train and cut his head in half.
Yeah. It's fucking gruesome. So, anyway, so now we're down to three. And it's Alex, Carter, and Clear. And so Alex is like, okay, it skipped Carter, it got Billy, so that means that I'm next and Clear is last. And so he shuts himself off in Clear's cabin, because Clear lives alone, and I'll talk about this later. So he stays there. And, you know, he rigs everything to where it's, you know, dummy proof. Everything's like padded and shit. And he's just gone off the walls batshit crazy. But he is so... He is so fixed on beating death himself that he forgets that Clear was actually sitting a little bit closer to the explosion than he was. Ba-bum. And then he's like, no! Clear's next! And so he runs over to Clear's house, and the FBI run over to Clear's house because they're after Alex, and Clear tries to run after Alex because the FBI is after Alex, and Clear is clearly fucked because... It's a fucking stormy night, like the night that they were supposed to die and the plane crash. And she, you know, gets cornered by a fucking electric wire, and the FBI show up, and then Alex shows up, and then he tries to save Queer, who is trapped in a car.
He pulls up the Batman.
Yeah, and then he's able to give Queer time to leave, and he tells her that I'm not going to let death beat both of us. And so he is ready to sacrifice himself for her, proving that he wasn't necessarily afraid of death, and I'll get to that later. He jumps into the explosion, essentially, and the explosion knocks him back, and he blacks out. And the FBI try to resuscitate him, and it cuts to black.
Where is she? Rachel! Claire! Claire!
Get it? Because electrocutions? Yeah. And then like,
that's pretty funny. It's pretty funny.
You just spit everywhere.
Stop! Okay, we're going to cut a bit of that out.
No.
6 months later, Alex is alive.
Ow!
And he's with Clear. They're actually a couple now.
Who has blonde hair.
And Carter is now their best friend. And they're on a plane. And they've just landed in Paris, France.
Which is crazy to me.
And, well, it makes sense. Because now they have, you know, kind of gotten closure to this. This is the final puzzle piece to all of this, Alex says. And, you know, they're at a cafe down in Paris. And
the platypus. Paris.
And Paris the platypus. They're at a cafe.
Barry the platypus!
Okay, they're at a cafe, they're having some wine, they give a little toast to all, in honor of all those on Flight 180, and along with those that Alex couldn't have saved.
Yeah. They said, let's cook this bread.
And it's a good ending, it's a happy ending.
For the toast.
It's a happy ending all around. But then Alex, you know, because he's batshit crazy still, is like, hold up a minute, I've been kind of keeping this to myself for 6 months, but isn't it kind of crazy, pulls out the fucking map again, that, you know, Clear was supposed to die, and I was supposed to die, but nobody intervened, and I didn't die, so wouldn't that kind of mean that I'm still supposed to die? And so he kind of freaks himself out, Carter freaks him out by joking about it, and he's like, oh shit, I might actually still be next, even though it's 6 months later. And so he runs off, and he's like, you guys stay there. And then fucking domino effect happens again, causing a big neon sign to break in half and then swing over. Huh?
Doesn't it say, like, Flight 180 or something?
I think
so.
Yeah. I think so. And then, the neon sign breaks in half, flies over, it's gonna swing and fucking crush Alex. And then Carter pushes him to the side. He intervenes, they're both safe, and then Alex is like, wait a minute, you're intervening. And then Carter's like, yeah, wait a minute, this thing doesn't just do a boomerang effect and just go back around if it didn't kill everybody, right? And then the sign swings back and then fucking crushes him and Carter, and then credits, the end.
Yeah. Bum, bum.
What's this movie about?
Well, I want to say, I have never seen any of the Final Destination movies.
Really?
Hmm.
Okay.
I can tell you exactly why, too.
This may be the episode I talk the most.
Okay, good. Finally. Jesus Christ.
He's
be like, I talk for 20 minutes straight and then go...
Yeah, pretty much.
Clap time!
He's making up for
much,
all of his...
Pretty much.
His
pretty
missing.
Much.
But, yeah. 6 minutes. So, I never watched these...
I like having Avery in the room because I can say something that's not funny and he'll
and
laugh.
And you just hear from behind camera, you go, ha.
Yeah.
See, exactly. You know the thing.
You know the thing.
Called.
10 bucks.
My father. Irrational fears, right? Well, one of my fears, and I talked to Avery about this.
Your father is an irrational fear?
Well,
his father is an irrational fear. Never mind.
And,
No, that's someone else. Alright, continue.
Okay. Where I have this thing I feel as if at any moment...
Sorry.
At any moment, I could die for whatever reason.
You have this thing, also known as being alive. Yeah, you could die at any moment for any reason.
Well, that's interesting.
Congratulations.
That's interesting.
But that's why I didn't watch this, because I got scared.
Yeah.
Mm.
I also want to point out that one of the first inserts of the entire film is the play Death of a Salesman.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not really sure why. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the play or seen it, but...
I know a salesman.
Are you talking about, like, in the opening title sequence?
Maybe.
Or, like,
no,
in
the film
itself?
No, he grabs a book.
Okay.
And it shows
because, that. Like, in the opening title sequence, it shows, like, little bits of text. I can't tell what it's from. It's not the Bible. It looks like the Bible. But I pause it a few times, and a lot of the text mentions Faust and the devil.
Oh, Faust.
Faust, yeah, and the devil, which I'm vaguely familiar with.
I've talked about that on the podcast before.
Yeah, well,
it's a play by like a Germanic writer.
Death of a Salesman?
No, Faust.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, the Death of a Salesman. I looked up what it meant, and it was talking about how it's the loss. It's about the loss of identity and the inability to accept change. Which I don't quite know how that plays into.
And death is definitely. Probably the biggest change that can happen in someone else's life. Not just their own, but just other people's around them.
Yeah, well...
Maybe, but I feel like death is a certainty.
Yeah.
So it's
yes.
Not...
Well, it's the only thing that's certain in life beyond taxes.
Yes. Okay.
That's a famous quote. I believe Ben Franklin said it. The only two certainties in life are
death and
taxes.
Yeah.
So that wasn't just random...
Yes.
Yeah, and that's something I really want to talk about in a second.
Random or taxes?
No, the death is the only thing
you guys
that's
taxes,
certain Jim? To everybody, and everybody knows that. Anyway, Kyle, what...
Oh, I mean, kind of going off of that, I mean, I think this is like one of those movies where it's like, maybe the rules of the universe are unclear, but I feel like the meaning of it is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you can't escape death no matter how hard you play at it.
Yeah.
Well...
And also, death has OCD.
Well, I'm
curious.
What
do you mean by that?
Well, like, in this movie, like, death, like, everything has a design.
Yeah.
Like, it's implied that, like, your entire life, like, is planned from, like, when you're going to die and how.
Yeah.
And, like, if you deviate from that, death has to find another way to, like, fix that. And I'm like, that's OCD.
That's... So I can agree with that. But it's interesting, though, that... The way that at least death is personified in Axe is definitely very sinister.
Mm-hmm.
And
I feel like that's done for thematics. Theatrics, I guess, is the word I'm trying to use.
They're all the same word.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I feel as though, like Chris said, there is definitely something sinister about that death, especially the way
it's presented,
right in the morgue specifically, and how he's like this kind of like, "Ooh, I'm gonna get you."
Yeah,
it is, as you said, a game.
I do feel like it is a little over the top, and I feel like it's literally just there.
I think that's just
to sell the horror aspect of it, which this really is not a horror; it's a thriller.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that just like that's such. The times that it was in, you know.
This was originally supposed to be an X-Files episode before adapted into a feature.
I guess they thought that was too good a concept. They're like, this could actually
be... Yeah, no, that's literally what happened.
Yeah.
Is the guy who wrote the spec script for the show, whoever he presented it to, was like, hey, make this into a feature. And he worked with... because it's a horror film, it's directed by, what's his name, James Wong?
James Wong, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So I think, among other things, this movie is about the weight of mortality. Specifically...
Like Survivor's Guilt.
Yes. Specifically how your perception of death changes depending how you're exposed to it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just being a human, from the moment you are told about the... From the moment you are aware of the concept of death, you are constantly aware of it.
Well, yeah, because it's not a concept that
yeah.
we are born with.
Yeah.
It is definitely something learned.
Yeah, well, and I've talked about this before. This it's why it's, like, just dying in general, like, gives me so much cause for worry. It's because it is the exact opposite of everything possibly known. Because it is uncreation.
Yeah. Yep.
That, and, I mean, this is
where... Unexistence.
This is where, you know, nihilism kind of comes into play. And Carter, who's the guy who gets his head cut off? Is that Carter?
Billy.
Billy. It's one of the, I think it's no. It is the guy who's sitting in the car at the train.
The guy who is prepared to take his own life is Carter.
Okay,
he's not the one who gets his head cut off.
Okay, so Carter says
he's the one who saves Billy after he was prepared to kill him along with himself.
Okay, he says if we're all on this list, then why wait any longer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so I do think that there is definitely this. Manifestation within each character of this, you know, when they realize how close death is, that is, you know, brought forth. But it's interesting that most of them are like, okay, well, if he's gonna get us, why put it off?
Yeah.
With the exception of Clear, Alex, and
well
Terry, because her opinion is, you know what, I don't even feel like dealing with this, I'm walking away.
Yeah, and it's every form of grief.
Right.
It's depression, it's denial, it's, okay, well, that's just what happens.
You yeah. know,
it's every reaction to death.
Yeah, well, it's like, and that's why you can't, that or not that you can't, that's why I don't think you should try to subscribe to, like, predestination in any aspect, because as soon as you take, like, the impact of your decisions out of the equation, then it's like, well, what's the point in your decisions? You know, if everything's pre-aligned, if everybody, you know, if everybody is going from birth to head to a certain place, and no matter what they choose, it's all predetermined, then it's like, well, yeah, why live, really? I mean,
well,
check that out. I
understand what you mean, but I think that you can kind of, you know, subscribe to the idea of predestination and still, you know, feel that what you do, you know, has a purpose. Not that you're just doing it because you were predestined to do it. I just think that it's, in my mind, predestination is more of of the security that, you know, that you are going to die at some point, and you can have security in knowing that it is going to happen at some point, but you're just not going to know exactly when it happens.
Well, that's not predetermination. Yeah, that's just, well, like, the reality of the situation.
I didn't really explain that well.
Yeah,
but
well,
yeah.
Well, because there are two forms of it. Yeah. There's hard determinism, and then there's a soft determinism, right? And I forget the explicit, like
knowledge
dictionary definition of it, but it's like hard determinism is like everything you do is predetermined, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can live in that. Like you just can't, because you can't make choices, you know, because all your choices are completely meaningless, because you're not making those choices. You're just drifting through life. Mm-hmm. And, well, it's like the people who are the most unhappy are the people who are just drifting through life, who don't think their choices matter.
Well, right, and the derivation of meaning comes from taking on responsibility, making the choices for yourself.
Yeah.
So if you're not, then you lose that, and then soft determinism.
Soft determinism is maybe the idea that your ending is going to be the same, but everything in between is you know, muddied.
Right.
I guess that's
I think you could see that. I think a lot of, like, evangelical Christians kind of believe that. They're like, well, there's, like, an end time thing, and that's going to happen regardless, but the way to get there is kind of, you know,
well, it's more
up in the air, as far as we can tell, at least.
Yeah, it's more with me is that, you know, just accepting the fact that I'm not really going to know how I die. And yeah. and having to accept that fact, because a lot of people get hung up on that.
Yeah.
And so okay, this kind of falls back to what I was talking about of how I think this film is about the weight of your own mortality and how that kind of changes you.
Before you go back into that, I want to finish up with that. And so really, what you're talking about, you know, hard determinism, where like everything is planned out. I think, and then like death, how it's going to happen, so nihilism, right? Well, and so after that is where you get absurdism, which basically, you know, as I, you know what it is. So I do think that like there is a level, at least within these people, Terry being one of them, who is like, look, eventually I'm going to die, but I don't feel like dealing with this, so I'm just going to go live.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can go.
Well, real quick, I was going to ask, do you have a bottle of water? Okay. Well, all right, shit. Okay, there you go.
Bum, 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 bum. $10.
I...
Legend of Zelda. Yeah, you...
Oh, you mean... Da, 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 da.
It was something like that,
almost
yeah.
the exact same thing that he just did.
No, it's not.
I said, all bum, right. bum, bum, bum.
It's softer than that.
No.
It's soft determinism, not hard determinism.
Yeah. Look at you. You believe in God.
Alright. So, going back to what I was saying about the weight of mortality. I'm going to go on a long spiel for a second.
Steven Spiel.
I have...
Berg. Sorry.
No, it's cool. I'm just pausing long enough to cut around that.
You're not editing this.
I would like to edit this.
You're not editing this.
If you're going to cut that out, I'm not going to let you.
Yeah.
Continue.
All right. So, with this film franchise in particular, I have a really strong connection to it because growing up, I really liked these movies. I loved watching these movies along with the show that was really big at the time when I was in middle school, 1,000 Ways to Die. Just because you know, I was a little kid and I was just really into seeing violence and gore in movies, not because I was a psychopath, but just because I liked seeing like the practical effects and just I had the disassociation with that and reality enough to the point to where immediately where I would see someone die on the TV, I'll immediately be thinking, oh, how did they make that look so real? And so that's why I enjoyed these movies so much. And the last time I watched one of these movies was when the last one came out, which I think was around 2012.
2011, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, 2011 or 2012. And that was the last time I watched one of these up until last night when I watched it for this podcast. And it was the first time that I really intently watched the first one. I think the first one in particular is the only one that's super profound because the other ones get kind of stupid. This one doesn't really center on, you know, showcasing the deaths as much as the other ones does just for the thrill of it. It does a very good job at showcasing how the characters react to death. And I think that I revisited this movie at the right time, maybe a little bit too late, because it got me thinking about a lot of things. For one, when I was a kid growing up, my perception of death... Well, first off, okay... I was scared of death, like most normal people are, up until when I was about 7 years old. I had a near-death experience where I was essentially drowning to death. I was in the process of drowning, and I blacked out. And I remember the last thing that I saw before I blacked out was just the sun looking from out the top of the pool, and... You know, I had been panicking and struggling, and just for those, like, last few seconds, I just kind of look at the sun, and it was... I know this is getting really deep, but I'm going to try and keep it as light as I can. I just kind of felt peace at the moment, and just thinking in those last few moments that if I am to go right now, that's not really a bad image to go out on. So in there, that was security in knowing that, okay, in this moment, you're about to die. And so everything leading up to that, it's fear, because you are uncertain. But in those last moments of certainty, it's peace. Now that's going to get into Alex's character in a second. But anyway, after I was pulled out of the pool and I, stopped blacking out, I woke up. From that point forward, up until a year after I graduated high school, I had a more secured perspective on death. I wasn't really afraid of it, not in a weird way. It was just more that it was weird. I was scared of death, but then when I experienced it for a second, I felt protected in a way. And that's kind of how Alex feels, because after he escapes it, he kind of feels like he's untouchable in a way. And that shit's real. That's just real. I mean, if you ever have a near-death experience and you survive from it, that's the best fucking feeling in the world. And I have heard from other people who have had that. Now, it definitely depends on, what the scenario was. But, okay. Well, yeah. Anyway, we are going to cut that out. Anyway, what I'm getting to is that, up until that point, I always just thought of death as it applies to me. And then I remember when I was in high school, I wasn't graduating, but it was graduation season. My mom told me a story, and I remember she was telling me this story as we were driving to someone else's high school graduation. She told me a story about a guy who, in her graduating class, died in a car wreck on his way to graduation. So it's the feeling that's kind of what this movie shows too. There's a line at the very beginning, I think, where Alex's dad says that you have your whole life ahead of you, and there's that fear in knowing and thinking, what if I don't? What if I'm, I'm going to my graduation and I got all this time, but what if, in 5 minutes, all that time is gone? And, I'm kind of going all over the place, but I swear I'm going to pick the pieces back up in a second. But, what was I going to say? Also in the movie, Claire tells Alex, I think it's interesting that Claire's name is Clear, because she seems to have the most, clarity with death, partially because she experienced death at a very young age. She tells a story to Alex, about when she was 7, that, her father, went out just to a convenience store one day, and a man walks up behind him and says, don't turn around. And he just thinks it's one of his buddies playing a joke, and he does turn around. It turns out that it was a robber, and he shoots him in the head. And it's just freak. It's when death happens around you that you don't expect. It's like you are aware of death until it happens and you're not expecting it, and then you're just constantly expecting it, and then it just kind of puts you in this dread. And that's why I'm talking about the weight of mortality. It's just thinking that you have all this time, and then the moment you realize that you don't, whether it's time on this earth or time that you have with other people, It's the weight of knowing that you don't know when that's going to end. And to kind of wrap it up and to kind of connect with the story that my mom told me, even after she told me that story, I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. I still couldn't really imagine dealing with that because, again, I still was kind of, you know, going off this, you know, feeling that, you know, I'm kind of protected by death because, you know, I experienced it, but I'm fine, so it's not really going to apply to me. And then I was doing good up until a year after I graduated. My best friend from high school died in a car wreck 12 hours before his graduation. And that's when the weight of mortality really fucking set with me, because it wasn't really the idea of dying. It was the idea of, you know, time kind of taking somebody away and then thinking that you didn't do enough with that person. And so I feel like that is really what changes Alex's character, because at the beginning of the film, he's scared of death. He is scared to go on the plane. He is scared for himself. And then he has a near-death experience. He escapes it. He feels this power, but then he sees other people around him die, and he thinks that he's afraid that someone else is going to die, and he is not going to be there to do everything that he can for that person. And so that is when, at the very end of the movie, he is able to essentially stare death in the face and save Clear, who he didn't even know when the movie started. So I say all this to say that death is scary, and grief is natural. But if you let grief kind of consume you and tell you that you know, you're not doing enough with your own life, or you're not doing enough to interact with people who are close to you, then, I just kind of, I'm sorry, this got really deep, I'm gonna break the tension real quick. Yeah, this is a fucking deep movie. I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, people think of the Final Destination movies and think that it's all fun, because it is a thriller, and in a way it is fun. But especially the first movie, it's the topic about death and how that affects other people's lives, specifically the ones who were close to the people who did die.
Well, the teacher lady.
Yeah.
So she was initially the one who was supposed to get back on the plane, like you said, but she sends the teacher on, so we have this May arc with her where she's dealing with... like you said, survivor's guilt, where she's like, it should have been me. I should have been the one on that plane. It should have been me. And like, that's another aspect of that, I feel.
Yeah, well, and this is like just the worst part about life is the fact that it ends.
Yeah, this is why life is hard, ultimately.
It is. Well,
everything is a struggle.
Right.
And I mean, even just living.
Mm-hmm.
Being alive,
right.
Dealing with other
I would say that the fact that life ends is what makes it valuable.
Yeah, well,
and it's easy to confuse that and to get into a depression when you are grieving over somebody and thinking, well, you know, there is no worth because it just ends. And I would argue, and it is very easy to get into that. And this is the last very deep thing that I will say. That same year that that my best friend died before his graduation, within that same year, like up until that point, I did not really deal with death of anybody else other than relatives who were just great grandparents who had died of natural causes, you know, in their, you know, 80s to 90s. You know, they lived a full life. I didn't really get hung up over that. But that same year that my best friend died, within that year, 7 people that I not only knew, but was either close with or grew up with, all died within that year. And it really hit me, And I got into that depression, and that was around the same time I graduated, and I'm thinking, oh, I got the rest of my life ahead of me, or maybe I don't. And so I really got into that, you know, hole where I'm like, what is the point? But you also do this thing where you, like, work very, very hard and kind of work yourself to death to do everything that you can with everybody, because you feel like, you know, you don't have enough time. But I would say the best thing that you can do to, and the healthiest thing you can do, you know, if you're going through grief, or if you're just going through a common existential crisis because death exists, the best thing you can do, and I know it sounds cheesy, is to allow yourself to live. And okay, that's the end of my...
Well, on that, you know, this is where the idea of living in the now comes in, right? And so, I mean, Kyle is right on this. You know, you do have to plan for the future. But I also think that you can't live necessarily to just try and achieve that future. This is a conversation for another time, but I do want to throw that out there. At least that's what my opinion is.
And you know, and Jake and I have talked about this a lot, you know, and it's not that there's ever a discount of the present, because obviously, you know, if your present sucks always, then it's like, well, shit, man, like that's not good, you know. And you do have to live in those moments, you know. I tend to take the route. This is just how my brain is hardwired.
Softwired.
Excuse me. Softwired. Soft food?
Are you done? No. Are you gonna say what you're gonna say?
Well, the way that my brain works is that it's geared on planning, on looking at the near future, the medium future, and then maybe long term future. But I'm more so concerned with, like, let's say the next 6 months of my life and how that feeds into the next few years of my life. And I'm like, well, if I keep that in mind, I'll be all right, you know. But like Chris said, it's like when you have a near death experience, or when someone in your family dies, or you almost die, or something like that happens, you know, it does give you cause to say, yeah, I mean, there are multiple responses, but there's the response of, well, nothing matters because I'm gonna die, or maybe it's, wow, if everybody's gonna die, I need to make sure that I use my time wisely. And that's the thing about the universe, baby, is that even though it's infinite, it's still finite, just like your life. It has infinite capacity, but it's still finite.
Right. So it's important to think about the future, but also live, number one, without regret, because if you regret what you haven't done, then you'll never be satisfied when you do die, and live without the worry of trying to do everything you can, because you'll also be unhappy with that. I think, you know, what you were talking about a little bit is you come to realize that when the people die near you, is that you're not unstoppable. You're not immortal. You're not unkillable.
Yeah.
Which I don't think Alex has that mindset yet. I think he may think that he is immortal. Because I think that... So...
All right, he is immortal?
Well, he thinks that death is trying to kill him. And if he can keep cheating death, then he'll live forever.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because then that might imply that death isn't all-powerful.
No.
You don't think it implies that?
Well, the entire series put together, if you watch it, I've only seen this movie and the very last movie. And the very last movie, spoilers, ends on flight 180.
Yeah.
Right? The very last movie, those characters survive the entire movie, and then they're on the flight from this movie, and they die. And basically, the plane crash kills those characters from last movie, and then part of the debris kills another person from that movie as well. Yeah. Like, everybody dies, and it's almost unclear if you are actually escaping death, or if death is just almost playing with you in this. Like, are you just prolonging it? Mm-hmm. until you get to the inevitable?
Yep.
Or is it that this was always the plan and death's just fucking with you? Well, I tend to think it goes into the prolonging aspect, mm-hmm. but because it's so inescapable, like, you know, you can stretch a rubber band in perpetuity, right? Perpetuity. But eventually it's going to snap. That's inevitable.
Right. But what I'm saying is, if death was all-powerful, then in any given moment, potentially, it could just take you whenever you wanted to. Which, if that is the case, then there it is. But if it's not and death is all-powerful, then it must mean that death is playing
mm-hmm.
with them. Or that it was always how it was supposed to be, that
right.
they were going to yeah. die like that.
Yeah,
because if death was all powerful, then they couldn't cheat it.
Right. Well, and then well
the moment you're
that's
trying
the question
to
is
run,
what is the purpose of death? And,
yeah,
yeah. And
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, what I think part of what it says is that the moment you try to run from death, you're already dead because you're not living.
Mm. Yeah, I can agree with that. So then are we getting into
and that's why I talked about yeah, grief like so much is because that's what grief tends to do to you. The moment you see death, you witness it, you try everything you do to run from it, and if you're not careful, that kind of consumes you. And it takes over your life. Death takes over your life. And you're already kind of dead, but you're still
so
alive.
So then maybe death isn't the... Hold on, how do I say this?
Which is why I said just live.
So maybe this film isn't portraying death as non-existence, but rather a state
yeah.
of being, maybe? Because it's yeah. so based on what you're saying, you know, if so you have to define what living mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. and then if death is what you just how you just described it, then is ultimately the goal of death not to kill you, quote,
no.
but make it so where you can't live?
Yeah.
Well,
because yeah.
I think that Alex does that to himself. The moment he tries to be on the same playing field as death, he ends up kind of killing himself.
Sure.
Death
but
presents
but
itself
saying.
As just a force of nature. They do portray him to be senator, which could imply that he is trying to inflict death. I don't know. I think that what they are actually, what their main intention to do is that he's an inevitable force of nature.
Well, see, I don't think death is a force of nature. I think it's the opposite of nature, right? It's unnatural. Because, yeah, everything dies, but it's the exact opposite of, let's say, the goal of nature. It's the exact opposite of what nature is, which is life. So death is the most natural thing to happen to life, and yet it's exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It's the unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that weird, like...
Well, it's the dichotomy of good and evil.
Yeah.
So without evil, there is no good.
Yeah.
So without life, so without death, there is no life, because death is what gives life meaning. So if nothing ever died, then nothing would ever truly be alive.
Well, even
if
on,
they're,
even
if
on
they're
that,
all super, then
no one
is.
Well, even on top of that, it's like, you know, a forest can't grow unless, you know, parts of it die, right? You know, a forest will actually,
yeah.
like, you know, forest fires,
right?
Right? Those are done to clear out some of the brush and stuff. And it does kill a lot of trees and grass and even animals and stuff. But then the forest replenishes itself and it's new life and it's maybe better than before, you know, or at the very least there's more of it than before. Like,
So if I die, do I come back stronger than ever before?
You do if you're in Star Wars.
I'm not saying.
You do
what,
if you're
Obi-Wan. So, a lot to think about there. We're almost out of time, guys. I know you want to talk about whatever. The Hari, I'll let you.
The reason we're talking about... The reason I was going to bring up Hare Krishna, which, full disclosure, I don't really know anything about it. But at the beginning of the movie, right before Alex goes on the flight... there is a man who hands him a pamphlet and he tells him that there is life after death, and it is a pamphlet that is it is titled The Magazine of the Hare Krishna Movement. From no, he says death is not the end. From all I know about it, it is a Hindu religion. It is a religious movement, and one of their religious beliefs is that they believe in reincarnation. That is all I know about it. If you guys know anything more.
Okay, so I know, like, just a hair of Taoism.
Oh. Or a Hare.
Yeah.
What? Oh. And so Taoism is, like, I think Tao means the way. And one of the things they talk about is that you can never actually talk about Taoism because...
Like Fight Club.
It exists beyond our comprehension. So talking about it doesn't actually mean anything because spiritually it exists beyond.
Yeah. Okay.
And so they also talk about basically there is this spirituality that exists in us all, but we can never interact with it again because it is beyond our own cognition.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm pretty sure there's a derivation of Hare Krishna that comes from Taoism. I think it's called like the Krishna consciousness or something like that. That has to do with that. That's all I know, but there is sort of connection there. Yeah. And also Force Ghosts.
And that definitely makes sense because, you know, for a while... Yeah, but that makes sense because for a while up until I was actually really exposed to death, I had the... I was able to deal with it just thinking that... accepting the fact that I'm not going to be able to understand death and kind of have peace in the fact that it is beyond me and it is enough that I am here among something that I don't understand. Yeah. If that makes sense. It's because a lot of people who, like, have existential dread, they have existential dread because they're not content with the fact that they don't understand why we're here or, you know, how we got here or what's going to happen after death.
Yeah, they just think about it.
And that makes sense. I mean, that's so totally rational. But I think it makes sense to have that perspective. But I think, and it takes a lot of, like, you know, mental fortitude to be okay with not knowing what happens.
Absurdism.
No. Yeah, for certain.
No. Well, you got to give up that control.
Yeah.
Right? Because at the end of the day, you are only in control of your own actions and everything outside of that there you don't have any control over.
Whether or not you know when you're going to die, you're still going to die.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's what Alex forgets is that even if he beats death in this design, yeah, cool. He's still going to die.
Yeah.
They're all still going to die.
So think about what we said. I think we all have come away with a little bit, slightly different opinions on this.
Yeah. We were kind of all over the place.
But think about what we said. You know what Alex didn't forget? He didn't forget to take a shit.
That's right.
There are two scenes in this movie where people are pooping.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me because a lot of times... Most times, people do not go to the bathroom in film.
That's true.
And in this film,
there were
three different scenarios where people were pooping. And there was a scene made out of it.
Yeah. And it's crazy because it wasn't until like season one of The Mandalorian that we even got that there was bathrooms in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
But maybe there is something to be said about that. Because you were talking about the cycle of life, right?
Life is shit, man.
Well,
the cycle of food.
Well, you ingest and what you poop out is fertilizer, basically.
Yeah.
It's to give new life.
Yeah.
So maybe there is something there.
Yeah. Are we wanting to do a rap, or is that kind of disrespectful to what we've been talking about?
No, I say we do a rap.
Okay. Well, one more thing I want to say is this was produced by New Line Cinema. And for those of you who don't know...
Spy Kids!
New Line Cinema also produced the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
They produced like almost every fucking movie that exists
in the 90s and early
and 2000. That is an awesome movie. So, yeah.
Do you guys behind the camera have anything to say about death?
No.
No.
Do we not get to?
We don't have time.
Sorry, guys. Anyway, 6 out of 10.
Yo, New Line Cinema produced Austin Powers 2.
Yo. The Spy Who Shagged Me?
Yeah.
Did I kind of knew that?
Yeah. Anyways, he said 6... Oh, they also did Magnolia. Fuck off. Alright. He said 6 out of 10.
Yeah, Magnolia sucks. I hate that movie.
I think I'll go 7.5 out of 10. I liked it. It's got a little bit of a camp in there, and I feel like they could have gone more into... I think they could have gone more into it. You know?
I would say 7.5 as well. I think there are some things that they did just to do. But overall, this was a surprisingly profound film from what I remember it being.
Oh, Lord of the Rings. They did those. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. All right, cool. Are we ready for...
This is for the final... Well, all right, well...
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see if this is the
Maybe
final
this
rap.
Is the final rap. Who knows?
It might be. I might die after this. Did you not like that joke?
I didn't do that. I thought about doing it, but
it doesn't matter.
It.
I already did it.
Hey, right. I didn't prepare anything.
Hey,
right. Baby, why the hesitation? We're going on vacation. To our final destination. And you need some respiration. Cause you're dying. Now I'm trying to bring you back. And he's gonna hit me in the back. Who is he? I'll tell you, it's death, and he's coming for you and me. Now I'm running around. Oh no, I fell and I skid my knee on the ground. Hey, I'm listening to the sound of other people dying because there was a bomb. And now I'm calling my mom because I'm like, hey man, I'm gonna die. And she's like, oh hey, that's kind of cry inducing because I'm crying for you because I'm pooping on the toilet as they tell me that you're dying. Now I'm trying to squeeze it in because I know that you're trying to tell me that Ben was her boyfriend. You were gay all this time. I had the suspicion that you were lying to me when you said that you had a girlfriend, but you really didn't. You had a boyfriend, but that's okay. Oh, wait a minute. The call just ended. You were gay. Hey, I found out that my son was gay. Now I'm talking as the mom. I don't really have something to go on with. I didn't write this. I'm just going all from my head, but now I'm laying in bed with my wife. Yeah, that's right, I didn't have a husband at all. I didn't even have a son. I just had a missed call. He didn't mean to call me. His mom doesn't understand that her son's dead and that he's gay, but I know that and I am too. Hey, how much longer am I gonna do this?
Final Destination 6, TBA.
Stop sauerkraut.
Holy shit.
Sounds sorry.
But also maybe it's because people poo when they die.
It's true. Have you not seen the one with Ewan McGregor?
Trainspotting?
No, Ewan McGregor. Tim Burton. Big Fish. The guy dies on the toilet when he sees the witch's eye. Nailed it. $10.
I haven't. But I do know when Chef dies in South Park that he poops a lot.
It's true.
Cut.
Also, Bad Grandpa.
Oh, cut. But he didn't die. Cut.